1460 WVOA.
Good morning and welcome to Environmentally Sound. I am Bob Lebensold, your host for the series on the natural world, education, and culture. We bring you guests from diverse disciplines, scientists, activists, authors, educators, entertainers, and public officials. We seek to stimulate your curiosity, intellect, and passion. Today's news from the natural world. Today is Thursday, June 10th, 2010, the 83rd day of spring, 11 days until summer. Summer begins on the vernal equinox, the day, actually the moment, when the sun's ecliptic, which is its apparent path on Earth, arrives at its furthest point north of the year. That point is the Tropic of Capricorn, 23 and a half degrees north latitude. It is also the longest day of the year. When next we meet in 2 weeks, we meet in summer. We have gained less than 1 minute of daylight since yesterday. That is an artifact of the solstice. The closer we get to it, the smaller the interval. We have gained 14 minutes since last we met 2 weeks ago, and the previous interval for the 2 weeks before that was 25 minutes, so it's just a little bit more than half of that. The sun rose at 5:23 this morning. It will set at 8:26 this evening. We will have 15 hours and 3 minutes of daylight today. The moon will rise at 4:19 tomorrow morning. It will set at 8:02 tomorrow evening. It is in the sky right now, and if you look in the right place, you will be able to see it until it sets at 6:57, but we generally don't look for or see the moon during the day, but occasionally you do just happen to look up, and there it is. We are 2 days before the new moon. Next full moon is on June 26th. High tides, the tide is just now in 10 seconds going to be high in New Rochelle. 10:55, 10:10, 10:10, 10:59, 10:11, there it is. We are now exactly at high tide in New Rochelle. Next high tide in Yonkers, 8:26 p.m., Dobbs Ferry, 8:54, Tarrytown, 9:10, and in Peekskill at 9:49 p.m. So they're all pretty high right now. But New Rochelle is exactly 17 seconds after full high, which is meaningless because it's full high. Now, just another word about the oil spill in the Gulf of Mexico. Everybody talks about it, so why not? Why shouldn't an environmentalist have a take as well? This is likely the worst man-made ecological disaster of all time. The Bhopal disaster, you may recall the explosion of the, I forget what that chemical company was, but that will be considered first by many because of the toll in human life, But if you consider the damage to the environment and the impact on life and decimation of the healthy ecosystem, which was the Gulf of Mexico, then this gives Bhopal competition, and I would say it surpasses it in size and other than in human life. This is the worst. We can blame BP, we can blame lack of regulation and vision, we can blame the government for inadequate response, but before you do, consider this. Once that oil well blew, there was nothing the president or BP could do about it other than what they did. It was and is an unmitigated, unprecedented disaster, period, and was from the start. Now, I heard one of these right-wing commentators who has a substantial following, but whose name shall not pass my lips, glibly announcing his solution, which would have worked mightily and is what President Obama should have done. I wish I could say the BS word on the air because that is just what that is. A dope with a microphone can solve our worst problems. Would that it were so. For now, all we can hope for is a permanent ban on all undersea drilling for oil and whatever jury-rigged solutions can be found to make this a grade 9 disaster rather than a grade 10 disaster. I made those up. Don't look for that scale in any book. But it's almost as bad as it could get, and perhaps some amelioration is possible, although it hardly matters to those hundreds of thousands of animals that are gone. If you care to actually understand the magnitude of this oh-so-preventable accident, log on to oceana.org or any of the scientific non-governmental organization sites which monitor the oceans and get it from the source. Fox News will not give it to you straight, nor will any of the other media. For one thing, I don't believe they want to know either. Report it too harshly and people will just tune out and turn on The Simpsons. Our regular feature, names of American service members who have lost their lives at war. May they live on in all of our hearts. Marine Sergeant John K. Rankle, age 23, of Speedway, Indiana. He was with the 1st Marines, was killed on June 7th in combat in Helmand Province, Afghanistan. Army Specialist Brendan P. Neenan, age 21, of Enterprise, Alabama. He was with the 508th Parachute Infantry Regiment. He was killed by an improvised explosive device in Jelawar, Afghanistan, on June 7th. Marine Corporal Donald M. Marler, age 22, of St. Louis, Missouri. 1st Marine Division, killed in combat on June 6th in Helmand Province, and in the same incident, two of his buddies were killed as well. Sergeant Brandon C. Berry, or Bury, age 26, of Kingwood, Texas, also with the 1st Marines, and Lance Corporal Derek Hernandez, age 20, of Edinburgh, Texas. Maybe in this country it was Edinburgh, but that's an English word, basically. Edinburgh, Texas. He was with the 1st Marines. And let me just take this opportunity, after mentioning Derek Hernandez's name, to point out that men of Hispanic extraction are dying to protect your freedoms. So be careful how broadly you paint with that illegal alien brush. Illegal aliens is one thing, but to paint all Hispanics and resent all Hispanics is to deny the sacrifice that Lance Corporal Derek Hernandez, age 20, and many other Hispanics have made so that you could be free. Second Lieutenant Michael E. McGahan, age 23, of Orlando, Florida. He was with the 101st Airborne, the Screaming Eagles, was killed by small arms fire in Nangarhar Province, Afghanistan, on June 6th. And from right up the street here, Army First Lieutenant Joseph J. Theinert, age 24, from Sag Harbor. He was actually a New York National Guard lieutenant. He was killed on June 4th in Kandahar Province, improvised explosive device. Also, Private Francisco J. Guardado Ramirez, another Hispanic fellow, age 21 of Sunland Park, New Mexico. He was with the 3rd Infantry, killed June 2nd in Baghdad in a non-combat accident. Private First Class Alvaro R. Regalado Cesarego, age 37, Virginia Beach, Virginia. He was with the 1st Armored Division, died May 30th, also in a non-combat incident. This one was in Iraq as well on April 18th. Lance Corporal Anthony A. Delicio, age 20, of Macomb, Michigan. He was with the 2nd Marine Division, May 30th, combat, Helmand Province. Marine Private First Class Jake W. Suter, age 18. What a loss. From Los Angeles, California, his most recent residence actually was Kaneohe Bay, Hawaii, from paradise to hell. 3rd Marine Regiment, killed May 29th in combat in Helmand Province. And finally, our last casualty whom we honor today is Marine Corporal Jacob C. Leicht, age 24, College Station, Texas. He was with the 1st Marine Division, killed on May 27th, the date of our last program. In combat, he stepped on a landmine in Helmand Province, Afghanistan. Now, according to this one website that I get this information from, he was the 1,000th American service member killed in Afghanistan. I've been reporting lower numbers, so I guess we have to get that straight. Corporal Leicht said he wanted to die for his country and be remembered. Well, here's looking at you, Corporal Leicht. We remember you today. The first death in the Afghan War was almost 9 years ago. These 12 American servicemen were alive on the date of our last broadcast 2 weeks ago. As I said, Marine Corporal Leicht was killed on that day. Please remember that American lives are at risk this very moment and may be lost at any time, even during this program. If you forget the price of your freedom and lifestyle as Americans, you deny the nobility of these warriors who protect those freedoms. Each of these deaths is a great loss to their families and to all Americans and all fighters for a better world. May they live forever in our hearts, and may this feature come to an end in the very near future, because there are no more deaths to report. Well, it's time for the Culture Corner. My reviews of plays, movies, opera, ballet, museums, and what have you. Keep in mind that these are my opinions and you are entitled to disagree with them, because everybody has the right to be wrong. Unfortunately, you don't have that right today, because I have nothing to review. My guest today is Dr. Deirdre Barrett, professor of evolutionary psychology at Harvard Medical School's Behavioral Medicine Program. She is the author of 5 other books besides the one we're speaking about today, which is called Supernormal Stimuli, 5 other books, if my information is correct. He's also a practicing therapist. Joining us from Cambridge, Massachusetts, welcome, Professor Deirdre Barrett.
Hi, nice to be here.
Good morning. My pleasure to have you. What's the weather like in Cambridge this morning?
Raining.
Actually raining. Well, we're a bit overcast, but I suppose we'll get that. Do you like the rain, Professor?
Yes. Yeah, it's a nice break from the heat, actually.
Cool. But why don't you give us a primer on supernormal stimuli? I was not familiar with the term before reading your book. I assume it is new to many of our listeners. What is it, and why is it of interest to discuss?
Well, it's a term that was coined by Nobel laureate Nico Tinbergen in his animal research. He was investigating what animals had instincts about, and as part of this, he would make dummy objects to test what they were responding to. So to examine like things about what birds liked about eggs, how they perceived a healthy egg of their species, what they wanted to nurture, he would make these plaster eggs of all sizes and all colors and mix them into the bird's real eggs in the nest and see which ones it preferentially set on when there were too many to keep them all warm. And he found that for birds, they liked eggs that were slightly larger than their real eggs. Whatever the natural color of their eggs was, they liked a more intense color, like if it was light blue, they liked bright blue. If it was unmarked, it should be unmarked, but if it had pale gray spots, they liked big black polka dots. So basically an exaggeration of a few key characteristics. And he could get these little birds that laid a small pale blue egg dappled with gray to sit on this kind of ridiculous-looking plaster day-glow blue dummy egg with big black polka dots on it that it would just continuously slide off. So an exaggeration of things pulled the instincts more than the natural thing, and that's what supernormal stimulus meant.
Was
something that pulls an instinct more than that which it's evolved to.
Interesting. Now, I gather from your book that the cuckoo, well, I've known that the cuckoo and also the cowbird are parasitic brooders, I think is the term, where they lay their eggs in other birds' nests. I noticed the pictures where the cuckoo lays in sparrow nests, unless it was the brown-headed cowbird.
Yes, they're different. They're different subspecies of cuckoos, and they specialize in parasitizing different birds, which are more or less common in their particular areas, and they lay slightly different eggs,
so
depending on which birds they are imitating. And yes, you mentioned the cuckoo because in nature, there are very few supernormal stimuli, but there are a few, and the cuckoo is one. The cuckoo not only parasitizes other nests, lays the egg so that the other species will rear its young, but it lays an egg that's a little bigger than that species' egg, a little brighter than that species' egg, and again, that bird will sit on it preferentially if it needs to choose. And then when the baby cuckoo hatches, it's got a slightly wider mouth that's slightly brighter red, and these, in Tinbergen's experiments, are what the bird, if it has to feed something, it would rather feed a super wide faux baby bird beak on a stick than its real baby.
And they also hatch earlier, don't they? So they get a head start on
it. Yes.
That.
In the book, I say it's kind of like the Cinderella story in reverse. The stepmother gives Cinderella all the attention while the ugly stepsisters go wanting. That by bird standards, the cuckoo is cuter and more beautiful and more pulling of nurturance than the real offspring of the birds. But it's, fortunately for animals, a relatively rare example of a supernormal stimulus occurring in nature. But Tinbergen made plenty for animals. He found that you could make dummy fish where if their underside was brighter red than that species normally is, a territorial male would attack the dummy fish while it ignored a real male swimming in it to its territory. He could make dummy butterflies that a male butterfly would mate with in preference or try to mate with in preference to a real female if it just had more dramatic stripes on it than the real female. For most types of instincts, he could make some object which pulled the instinct more strongly than the real thing. And this is all research that Tinbergen did in the 30s through 60s. But in my book, Supernormal Stimuli, what I'm doing is taking this concept and applying it to the major areas of human problems I think it's extremely explanatory of what we're doing.
While we're talking about humans and fish, isn't the whole concept of fishing lures kind of that, where the lure emulates the natural food but a bigger, brighter version of it?
Yes. Well, actually, most lures are simply trying to mimic, they imitate a particular fly that species of trout will go after. Many, many fishing lures are pretty natural stimuli. But there's a group, I think they're called strange attractors. There's a term for lures which don't actually closely resemble any particular insect, but exactly exaggerate the characteristics.
Yeah, and I think maybe that's what it does.
Yeah.
Okay. There's one thing I would like to ask you about. In one point, you talk about your clients, but you mean patients really. You're actually a therapist, are you not?
Yes, I'm actually not practicing right this minute, but most of my career I have been a psychotherapist seeing clients.
And a hypnotherapist as well.
Yes. Yeah, and I've done broad general psychotherapy, but I've also at Harvard I've worked out of the behavioral medicine program, which specializes in psychological interventions in health problems. So my last book was called Wasteland, spelled WAISTLAND, and it was a lot about how to change habits about diet and exercise and things that affect our physical health.
So the courses in evolutionary psychology that you give, are they required for medical students? Or is this an elective?
I actually teach evolutionary psychology to master students in psychology, not at the medical school. And I've been teaching health psychology at the medical school.
Interesting. Okay, we have a couple of minutes before our break. I would like to get into, as you say, you're focusing on people. We are different from all other animals in that we have this prefrontal neocortex. Now, not to scare our listeners into thinking this is too scientific. It's just a part of the brain that does analytic rather than habitual behavior. In the couple of minutes before the break, do you want to just discuss the difference between behavior that's based from the prefrontal neocortex and the deeper basal ganglia?
Yes, the basal ganglia, or our sort of simple primitive reflexive brain, is where habits reside. If you do something over and over and over, the commands for that get entrained in the basal ganglia. So if you're walking into cafeteria at work and ordering the cheeseburger and milkshake that you get every day, your basal ganglia is firing, and your cortex may be relatively inactive, the higher parts of your brain, or it may be thinking about something else. And especially the prefrontal area where we make decisions may not be very active at all.
So the prefrontal, we may be thinking, if we're a student in college, about an upcoming test and all that, and we just habitually just say, well, just give me the usual.
Yeah, either relatively inactive or on a topic other than what you're ordering.
Like
if you're walking to work, if you know the way, the basal ganglia is firing all the commands. If you're deciding, oh, which way is the correct way, or would I rather walk this way versus that way, then you see the prefrontal cortex light up. And they've done research, and basically, if you start trying to make a change, decide to do something different, for about 2 weeks, you see the prefrontal area taking over whenever there's a decision, whether it's something like, you know, taking alternate routes to work, or if you were deciding to eat healthy and only eat steamed vegetables and soups and salads for lunch, every time you got in that cafeteria line, it would be the prefrontal cortex that would be lighting up as you went, okay, so am I really going to do the steamed vegetables, or gee, maybe I could skip that one day and get the milkshake. You'd see the prefrontal area deciding that.
Last night, having read your book, last night I came home and I had a craving for cookies. And I said, no, Professor Barrett has taught me something and I want to try to practice it. So instead of cookies, I had some blueberries, some watermelon. I just kept eating sweet things, but staying away from the artificial things. And it you know, even after the watermelon and the banana and raisins, I still had that craving for cookies. I resisted it, I am happy to say, but I still had it.
Yeah, well, the takeaway from what all the research shows is that it really matters to be consistent. There's some bad diet advice out there that sort of says, oh, it doesn't matter if you slip once in a while, or, oh, if you're good all week, you can reward yourself with cake as a treat. But that's bad advice physiologically, because our blood sugar levels settle down if we stick with a good diet, and they're spiking and kind of screaming hunger at us if we vary. But
Professor Barrett, in terms of the brain habit stuff we were just talking about,
it's really important to be consistent, because after about 2 weeks, then the good habit gets ingrained and you don't have to think about it. Whereas if you're inconsistent, it stays a conscious struggle forever if you're sometimes slipping.
Okay.
Or...
Dr. Barrett, we have to take our break. Just hold that thought, please. You're listening to WVOX AM 1460 in New Rochelle, New York. I am Bob Lubinsohn. The program is Environmentally Sound. My guest is Professor Deirdre Barrett of Harvard Medical School, and we will be right back.
We have ways of making you talk.
Talk and talk and talk.
WVOX Worldwide.
Fox News Radio. I'm Lillian Wu. Family members of oil rig blast victims getting a face-to-face with the president at the White House today.
Press Secretary Robert Gibbs says President Obama wants to hear from the families about how the government can make sure this type of tragedy won't happen again.
Fox Radio's Rich Johnson. BP today reporting a slight increase in the capture rate of oil from the blown-out well. The company also facing increasing pressure from the government on paying out damage claims. Wall Street cheering some figures out today.
The number of people filing for jobless claims for the first time fell by 3,000 in the latest week. The number of workers continuing to file for claims, it fell by the largest amount in almost a year.
Fox Business Network's Connell McShane, the Dow up about 212 points now. And more than 400 people have been captured in raids across the country in what federal authorities hope is a blow to Mexican drug traffickers. Fox News, we report, you decide.
From the Fox Business Network, the most powerful name in business news. Down and down it goes. BP stock down another 9% earlier today in London as shareholders worry how much BP will have to pay out in oil spill damage claims. The British press is reporting on grumblings about BP bashing by President Obama and his administration. The mayor of London describes it as anti-British rhetoric. 456,000 new unemployment claims were filed last week. It's down 3,000 from the week before. An unhealthy labor situation in Minnesota. 12,000 nurses staging a one-day strike. Their union's angry about hospital cost-cutting. The hospitals say patients are being cared for well. A congressional report says the federal government acted too soon in providing a taxpayer bailout of the insurance giant AIG back in 2008. The report says the feds should have worked harder to work out a private industry bailout. With the Fox Business Report, I'm Connell McShane.
Want to lower the cost of doing business?
Keep your data safe and easily accessible.
Barracuda Networks can help. The Barracuda Backup Service is the only data storage solution that combines on-site hardware for rapid restores and cloud-based storage for disaster recovery. At just 50 cents per gigabyte per month and advanced deduplication technology to significantly reduce storage space requirements, the Barracuda Backup Service is the most affordable and efficient data storage solution for any size business. Call 888-ANTI-SPAM for your free evaluation unit. 888-ANTI-SPAM. Or visit Barracuda.com.
In the north end of New Rochelle, you'll find an absolutely top-notch printer, one of the very best in the entire county. Frank Maselli's Minuteman Press is known for its fine work far beyond the Sound Shore area. In fact, this particular Minuteman Press is easily the class of the fleet when it comes to full-service community printers. Located just off North Avenue in New Rochelle in the narrow Waikagill walkway across the parking lot from the A&P, Frank Maselli's Minuteman Press is a terrific resource for individuals and small to medium-sized companies who want something very special special when it comes to printing. No matter how big or how small your needs, you get great skill and creativity from Maestro Maselli's master printers, all for very reasonable prices. From business cards to brochures, color copies, high-speed printing, informational booklets, and flyers, it's Minuteman Press down that walkway when you're heading to the A&P, offering quality printing at very good prices. Call Frank Maselli at Minuteman Press of New Rochelle, 914-576-0335. 914-576-0335.
Hi, this is meteorologist Steve Pelletieri from Ion Weather. It's springtime, and summertime is coming up quickly, but you still may have bills or have to bill for this past winter's snow and ice removal services. If you need past weather data for anywhere, take this number down, 1-877-267-8807, for past weather data or snow totals from this past winter. Now, this weather data is not free, but the information provided will solve problems. What kind of problems? Answering questions, like what the weather was for past accidents or slip and fall investigations, or how much snowfall fell and when. For law firms, insurance companies, and construction companies, and snow plowers and property managers alike, call toll-free 1-877-267-8807. Ion Weather data and storm totals. We just made the weather a little easier to manage. Ion Weather. Call toll-free 1-877-267-8807.
Today's public service programs are brought to you by the Burnback Law Firm of White Plains. This famous Manhattan law firm, now in Westchester, is a national leader in workplace job discrimination issues. Headed by attorney Jeffrey M. Burnback, the author of the well-known book, Job Discrimination, How to Fight, How to Win, the classic text informing employees of legal options available in cases of job discrimination, the Burnback Law Firm is located in downtown White Plains at 245 Main Street across from City Center. Airline founder Don Burr says Jeff Burnback's overview and knowledge of job discrimination ranks with other sweeping visions of employee empowerment. Another reviewer said, as a lawyer and public servant, Jeff Burnback has been drawn relentlessly, almost irresistibly, to the side of those who faced discrimination in all its forms. His entire life and law practice are dedicated to those who find themselves without an advocate when the roof caves in at work. Now, all this great knowledge, dedication, and expertise is available in our area at the Burnback Law Firm in White Plains, 914-428-9100. Area code 914-428-9100.
Thursday morning forecast for Westchester County and vicinity, starting off with some clouds early. Some patchy fog, too, becoming partly sunny. And our high temperatures for today will range between 74 and 79. Do have the chance of a late day or early evening shower. Then partly cloudy overnight, nighttime lows into the upper 50s. It'll be mostly sunny on Friday. Friday's highs will range between 73 and 78 degrees, mostly cloudy at night in the upper 50s. Now look for Saturday calling for clouds and sunshine, afternoon and evening showers and thunderstorms, and our temperatures in the upper 70s. I'm Eddie Rogers, Steve Pelletieri for WVOX and WVIP Worldwide.
1460 WVOX.
We are back. You're listening to Environmentally Sound on WVOX AM 1460. If you are listening, Issaquah, Washington, Clovis, California, Novosibirsk, Siberia, Teterboro, Teaneck, or Tenafly, New Jersey, or Tuscaloosa, Alabama, you have logged on to www.wvox.com, and you are listening live. I am Bob Levinsold. My guest today is Professor Deirdre Barrett. We're speaking about her book called Supernormal Stimuli. It's a fascinating book. I can't recommend it highly enough. If you do like to read books that are scientifically based, but that are popular, easy to read, and very informative and helpful if you actually get her message, I do recommend this book, Supernormal Stimuli by Professor Deirdre Barrett. Welcome back, Deirdre.
Hi.
Hi. Okay, a couple of things I absolutely must speak to you about. We must get them in. The concept of other species, I forget the exact term, pseudo-species.
Yes.
Where the enemy, if we're at war, the enemy always has to be a different species from us, almost a different species, a pseudo-species. So I guess in World War II, the Japanese were not quite the same kind of humans as we are. You also make a point about horror films as well as war films where there are zombies and werewolves and big gorillas, King Kong, Mighty Joe Young, and the Frankenstein monster. And they're all actually supernormal stimuli. We can hate them more than the actual threats that exist in the natural world, and just discuss that a little bit. And then after that, I'd like to just mention the Sesame Street monsters, which are very neotenous, which we'll get into, and therefore they're not threatening in any way.
No, but yeah, first for the ones that are scary. The main point of evolutionary psychology is pointing out that our instincts evolved for being hunter-gatherers on the African savanna, and the idea that sort of trust your instincts, they'll lead you toward the right things, is really only 100% true if we were still wandering around the savanna. They haven't had time to catch up to what our modern technological world is really like, and they're often leading us toward these supernormal stimuli. But in terms of threats, our threats back on the savanna were, you know, aggressive, unfriendly human beings, were big carnivorous animals. And so we have very instinctive threats about these things. And we don't have any coding that when we hear, oh, the Earth is warming a quarter of a degree a year, that doesn't automatically, instinctively strike terror into our hearts, because it's not a threat that we dealt with on the savanna. So all of the things that really easily get us going are either these things that we're already naturally afraid of, bad people or big scary animals, or they're exaggerations of those. And so at the innocuous end, you see it in the horror flicks. All the horror flicks are something about either a bad, murderous human being that's out to get people, or some huge, you know, nasty animal that's out to get people, or some very supernaturally exaggerated things. The posters are just, you know, Jaws with the giant shark, or Cujo with the rabid dog jaws, or, you know, or King Kong as the very super normal version of that, or some murder, you know, sort of supernaturally smart murderer stalking the city.
Now, I don't remember the details, but some years ago in a presidential election, one of the liberal Democratic candidates was blown away by this killer who had been let out and killed again. Do you recall that incident? And they characterized him, and they made him
it
bigger.
It was someone Michael Dukakis
had
put on furlough.
Right.
Yeah.
That's right. He had put him on furlough, and while he was out, he did some other dirt. So they pumped him up to, I guess, be a supernormal stimulus. Would you call that in the same category?
Yes. I mean, in a way, any real person is sort of a normal stimulus. There are bad, murderous people and big, nasty animals occasionally. But yeah, the media can hype someone sort of above and beyond what they are. So, yeah, some supernormal stimuli can be based on a real person. But in the horror flicks, all it's doing is just wasting a little bit of our time. I mean, we look at the poster for the giant jaws and think, whoa, you know, huge shark, I better pay attention to this more easily than we do global warming. I better pay attention to this. It
and
wastes
yet global
a little
warming.
Bit of our time. But,
and yet global warming is a much worse, a much more real danger.
Yeah,
but
I mean,
don't get it.
When leaders are hyping this sort of thing about war, there's this terrible enemy who's about to, you know, develop this supernatural weapon that's, you know, going to destroy us any minute. You know, with modern technological media, we can hype up, you know, either, you know, a modest small enemy into a gigantic one, or someone who couldn't really hurt us in the first place into this terrible threat. And some of this happens accidentally. That's what the pseudo-species concept that was actually Erikson's after he met Tinbergen, is the idea that most animals have very different rules of how they aggress against their own species versus others. They'll much more easily kill other species, and within their species, they don't generally fight to the death. As soon as one animal has proved it's bigger and stronger and it gets this territory or it gets this mate or it gets this piece of food, the lesser animal has a surrender signal that stops the fight and it just slinks away.
Understood that if a wolf shows its throat to another wolf,
the
vanquisher walks away. But now you also point out that with our weapons from from high above in drones, we really don't get close enough to perceive the threat. And we have people in Nevada, which is incredible to me, flying drones in Afghanistan. Not only can't they really see them very well, but they're thousands and thousands of miles away.
Yeah, they can't see surrender signals, and then our media is usually is showing not the surrender signals, but sort of hyped up threat signals. So Erickson was actually saying the supernormal stimuli of the big threatening enemy and the pseudo species of starting to think of other groups very different from us as not human, that it happens naturally to a certain extent, that things like just ethnic groups looking different and language being a big barrier, it's much easier to see somebody as just like you.
Okay,
when you're speaking.
Professor Barrett, we're going to have to take one last break, and we will be back for our last segment. You are listening to WVOX AM 1460 in New Rochelle, New York. If you're listening in Romance, Arkansas, hope you like it, Georgia, Big Beaver, Pennsylvania, Yell, Tennessee, Yellville, Arkansas, Yelling Settlement, Alabama, or Hoot and Holler, Texas, you have logged on to www.wvox.com, and you are listening live, and we will be right back.
When's the best time to listen?
I listen morning, noon, and night constantly.
The correct answer is anytime. WVOX Worldwide.
Fox News Radio, I'm Brett Larson. The state of Louisiana not waiting around for help from BP or the feds to prevent oil from reaching its shores.
Governor Bobby Jindal took a tour off the coast of Grand Isle, where the state didn't wait for permits or a check from BP, but started dredging on their own 3 weeks ago.
Fox Radio's Jeff Manasso in Grand Isle. After 49 years, the Stanley Cup coming back to Chicago. The Blackhawks arriving at O'Hare this morning with a water cannon salute after defeating the Philadelphia Flyers in a 4-3 overtime. Time and later today.
The Blackhawks team and front office will be on double-decker buses parading through the Central Business District, where there will be a ticker tape parade.
That's Megan McDonald with the mayor's office. Stocks are heading up after some positive news on the job market. The Dow jumping over 200 points and right now trading over 10,000. Fox News, we report, you decide.
Securing America. A fourth round of sanctions on Iran from the UN Security Council, but this time it includes the first restrictions on Iran's conventional military.
We recognize Iran's rights, but with those rights come responsibilities.
President Obama had wanted restrictions against Iran's banks, insurance industry, and other trade, but some voting countries didn't want to hit Iran's economy. Tehran says it only wants nuclear energy, not a bomb.
Iran has shunned opportunity after opportunity to verify the peaceful nature of its nuclear program.
U.S. Ambassador to the U.N. Susan Rice, Iran's President Mahmoud Ahmadinejad likening U.N. punishments to annoying flies. Lisa Brady, Fox News Radio.
Homeowners, how would you like to receive a $1,500 tax credit and save up to $465 a year on high energy bills?
Hella Windows wants to show you how for free.
It's time to replace those drafty, sticky, outdated windows.
Hella Windows makes window and door replacement easy every step of the way.
You'll enjoy informative, no-pressure shopping, free expert advice, and a free in-home consultation. Plus, we handle everything for you.
Save money on your utility bills, make your home look beautiful, and get a $1,500 tax credit at the same time.
Call for a free, no-pressure in-home consultation with a Pella Window expert.
Ask about the limited-time $100 off season special and 0% financing when you call. Call 800-483-8129. That's 800-483-8129. Experience the Pella difference for yourself. Call for your free consultation now. 800-483-8129. That's 800-483-8129.
It's a program about your money. Be sure to listen to Conversations with Gabelli Fund Managers every Tuesday at 12:30 only on 1460 WVOX and WVOX Worldwide. In 30 minutes, you'll hear news about the current market and get suggestions on how to invest your money. And each week, you'll hear a panel of portfolio managers discussing how to make money and to answer your questions on what to do now. You'll get advice from host Dan Devine and long-term experienced portfolio portfolio managers from GAMCO. They'll talk about where they're looking for opportunities offering growth and value. So get your money questions ready and listen every Tuesday at 12:30 for Conversations with Gabelli Fund Managers, only on 1460 WVOX and WVOX.com.
1460 WVOX.
Okay, we are back. Welcome back, and welcome back, Dr. Barrett. I have several questions. I hope we'll be able to get them in. They're all very important to me, and I must just say to you and to the audience, there's so many fascinating things in this book. I have pages and pages of notes and questions, which we won't get to, but the ones I do want to get to, and I'm just going to tick them off and hope we'll get them all in. First of all, I would like to just address the fact that Sesame Street, which does play to children, uses the concept of monsters, and yet they tone them way down. They make them cute so that they're not scary. And I wonder if that is a way that they defuse the monster concept. That's one thing. I also want to get into how you were the first one I've heard do it. You've co-opted the term intelligent design to apply to evolution as we manipulate DNA. And I'd like to talk about TV, how that's a factor in getting kids fat. And the God myth, how the most popular God myth on the planet, or leader myths, or actual people, have the good people murdered or executed. Jesus Christ, Martin Luther King Jr., Mahatma Gandhi, and Yitzhak Rabin, just among them. Okay, and if we still have chance time after that, which I doubt, perhaps we can talk about pornography as a supernormal stimulus, but that's last. So do you want me to pick one, Dr. Barrett, or did you hear what I said? And you can just address all of those in the next 7 minutes.
Yeah, well, get me back on track if I'm missing something.
Okay.
Sesame Street monsters are a very interesting thing, because despite their being called monsters, they have some of that monster quality that I was talking about. I think they are supernormal stimuli for these kind of big creatures to a certain extent, and they get a little bit of, oh, wow, sort of alarming attention. They're impressive because they're big and they're animal-like, but they're also very cute, and that's a category of supernormal stimulus we haven't talked about yet, but we definitely respond to things that have sort of baby-like characteristics, big eyes, head big relative to body, sort of short, chubby limbs, and just cute, helpless, playful behavior really pulls our interest in nurturing this thing. That's certainly what stuffed animals and toys and cute cartoon characters are playing off of. And it's very interesting that you point out kids like the Sesame Street monsters, and I think it's because they are partly a supernormal stimulus for what the term monster actually means, kind of big, impressive, whoa, you better notice this and see if it's a threat. But they're also supernormal stimulus for this cute, darling thing that we want to cuddle. And they manage to combine both those qualities.
So do you think that helps
kids?
They're
hugely attention-getting.
You think when kids grow up, the echo of the Sesame Street monsters in their heads, and the big canary bird, Big Bird, and all those big guys, you think it maybe when they see something that would ordinarily be a supernormal stimulus in the real world, that somehow the terror is defused, perhaps?
Well, it's an interesting question whether we sort of learn an association between those two. I think more that they will just keep that the Sesame Street monsters are somewhat unusual in combining those two things, and that in the future when they see King Kong, they'll still do more of the alarm thing, and when they see the cute, cuddly stuffed animal, they'll do more of the nurturance thing.
Interesting.
And that we don't see those combinations all that often.
Okay, let's jump to intelligent design. Now, that is a buzzword that religious people like to use, since they can't teach religion in school. They say, well, let's teach intelligent design, which is, I don't know if it's quite a euphemism, but that's their way of slipping their message under the radar. However, the way you use it is that actually we have begun to manipulate DNA and genes, and we can now intelligently and biologically design those who will follow us.
Yes. I mean, I think unless we instigate some terrible technological disaster on the planet, which is certainly possible, if we don't in the next two or three decades, I think the way our technology is going, that evolution as we've known it through the history of the planet will really be somewhat defunct, and human ability to manipulate genes and to evolve both humans and other species in the directions that we decide they go. I say intelligent design a lot, but really I mean intentional design, and it may be intelligent or stupid.
But you're saying that biological evolution might well come to an end in this generation because we will just speed it up so much by our own devices?
Yes, I mean end in terms of being this slow natural selection and become a very unnatural selection, you know, by humans of what they want for themselves and other species. I mean, I think that what we already can and should be doing is an intelligent design of our environment back to more what it's supposed to naturally be, that certainly the simpler fix to the obesity epidemic would be to just stop making refined junk food and start eating more natural things again, to ban or tax so that they become prohibitively expensive, the things that are bad for us, and to have stores that, you know, have fruits and vegetables available as snack food. But I think we're probably not really going to do that. And you hear all this talk about engineering us so that we can, you know, eat all the candy we want and still not gain weight. I mean, that's technically possible.
Yeah,
but engineering
like
humans so they simply don't crave the bad stuff is really the more direct way toward that.
So since we're talking about obesity, let's jump to television. According to your book, the average household has 2.7 people and 2.9 television sets. So there are more TVs than people in this country, or presuming that a household includes homeless.
Yes, and we watch hours and hours of television a day on average, and television is definitely a supernormal stimulus for social instincts. The laugh tracks, the friendly smiling faces just reinforce you socially more on average than real interactions.
And also
for sort of alarm adventure sort of,
yes,
of things.
As you point out, in the savannah we were tuned in to movement. That's when the prefrontal neocortex cut in. Sound or movement would get our attention, and TV changes all the time, different volumes. It's always attracting attention. And the recommendation, you mentioned a site, whitedot.org, I think, where they say that TV should not be watched by children under two at all, and it is a big factor in obesity. TV.
Yes, television pulls attention, and actually when something first gets your attention, you're very aroused physically, but television keeps throwing up these, and now this, and now this, and now this, that hold the attentional response, but your physiology gradually relaxes, and actually they've measured your metabolism as actually lower watching television than simply just relaxing in any other way. It's like one part of your mind stays in constant attention fixed on it, but your body just sort of damps down all responses, so you're not getting any exercise, you're not getting much intellectual stimulation, and you're just sitting there, and if you do anything, it's likely to be eating junk food because they're advertising junk food at you. So yeah, hours of television a day correlate very closely with kids being overweight and risk of type 2 diabetes in childhood.
Very interesting. Okay, would you recommend, we have about a minute, would you recommend that people stop watching TV or that they seriously curtail their TV watching habits?
Yes, I mean, really, that young children not watch it at all, I mean, it correlates with developing attention deficit disorder,
autism.
You know, getting exercise back then, you know, is very formative. But really, adults would do better not to watch television either. I mean, even the interesting content that we get from it can be gotten more quickly from reading and, you know, radio. When you're listening to content, you can be doing other physically active things. Radio doesn't pull you toward the physical inactivity that television does. And studies, seem to show habits change fast, that people are just miserable not watching television for a few days. They're bored. They don't know what to do. And then very quickly, they get more physically active. They find other things they enjoy, and things really normalize.
Well, as I said, Dr. Barrett, we have so much that we could talk about. Unfortunately, the clock is a rough master, so we cannot continue. I loved your book. I enjoy speaking to you, and thank you so much for sharing with our audience.
I've enjoyed being here.
Thank you. I'd like to thank Professor Deirdre Barrett for taking the time to chat with us this morning. While I don't share her optimism, we didn't actually get to her optimism, but perhaps you do. Nothing wrong with hope. In any case, this book, Supernormal Stimuli, is geared not to saving our species from disaster, but to suggesting an alternate way for each of us as individuals to live more intelligently and more healthy. Naturally, it's up to the individual to make those choices. Many have given up smoking, but some still don't. I remember a neighbor of mine all those years ago who smoked cigarettes through the hole in his neck when he wasn't using it for speaking. Last night, I ate broccoli, watermelon instead of cookies. Will I keep it up? Only the shadow knows. Our thought for the week, democracy has to be more than two wolves and a sheep voting on what to have for dinner. Stay tuned to WVOX, your quintessential community station. Next up, Howard Sterman. Thank you very much.
Start stressing you out.